Okay, so yesterday we, starting from the Einstein-Hilbert action, we finally end up with the first order action for 3D gravity. Okay, so I'm not going to come back on that. Now the aim, of course, is to perform the canonical analysis of this 3D first order action. Okay, but before that, so we want now the aim for the next few days, well, today and tomorrow, will be to do the canonical analysis of the first order action for 3D gravity, because it's going to be the starting point if we want to apply the Einstein, the Dirac program, okay, to quantize the canonical quantization. So, and what we also said yesterday at the end is that if you look at general relativity, yeah, gravity is going to be a constrained system, okay, because usually we're going to describe it either using the metric or the triad or tetrad in 4D. And of course, you have much more variable than you have than degree of freedom. Okay, so we are expecting a constraint system. And so, what is a constraint? A constraint is going to be a relation of this form between. So of course, of GR, we don't have this exactly this P and Q, but so it's a system, an equation between variable of the phase space, okay, equals zero, but this has to hold at every time, okay. So what does it mean? It means that the constraint is a conserved. This is a constraint. Is a conserved quantity.
Why not be considered
time dependent constraint?
Why don't we consider time dependent constraint?
So. Yeah, then your P and Q, so yeah, for simplicity first, we're going to consider that, but you will see that in the totally constrained system, yeah, we're going to have a time-dependent constraint, yeah. Okay, so here it's just to write simply, so usually it's going to be a relation between variable of your phase space, okay? So just to give you a kind of idea, so here what I want to show you is just that indeed the constraint, since it has to hold at every time, this means that it can be seen as a conserved quantity. And you know from Noether theorem, okay, that the conserved quantity is going to be related to symmetries, okay? And so for, I'm not going to go back to this. Because so this Noether theorem is, of course, you can see that in the Lagrangian formalism. And now our aim is to go to the Hamiltonian. So I'm not going to spend time on that. But you will see that during the tutorial on Friday, okay, where you have some question in the Lagrangian formalism to see. Because, of course, here what we are saying is that you have symmetries. But as I said, we are going to have different kind of constraint, and most importantly, different kind of symmetry. So the global one that you're familiar with, usually when you learn the Noether theorem, is for global symmetry. But now, in the context of gravity, what we're going to have is this gauge symmetries. And so, of course, this theorem is still valid, but you need a kind of generalization, and so you're going to see this generalization for gauge symmetry in the tutorial. Okay, but now what I want to do is focus on the Hamiltonian formulation and see what are the relation between the constraint and the symmetry. What can you say when you have a constraint? What can you say about the symmetry associated to that? Okay, So this is the idea of what we're going to see today. So let's start just to make sure that everyone is familiar with the vocabulary. So if you were there at the tutorial, this should be quite easy. So we, if you start from a Lagrangian, okay. So let's say Q E dot. Then you're going to perform a Legendre transform to go to the, so it's what you did in the first tutorial, to define, and for that you need to define the canonical momentum. So and so which, where you have this relation, sorry, and of course the hope here is that this is that then you can define QE dot in term of, so meaning that this function is invertible. And in the first tutorial you have seen some example where it's not the case, okay? And in this, when it's not the case, then you will have additional constraint. Okay, so this means that you hope that this kind of function, you can have a bijection between that. But in the case of constraint system, so when you have this, of course, you can just define your Hamiltonian as a function of QE. Well, of course, I'm using the Einstein notation. And this is what we call the Hamiltonian. Then just for some vocabulary, so the space of all pairs of QE and P, QI and PI is called the phase space. And if you're just considering the Q here, then usually we call that the configuration space, okay? But we'll see that in some cases. So here, of course, it's when you're really talking about a particle described by its position and its momentum, it's obvious that these are the configuration space. Then, of course, in other theories, sometimes you have the choice to choose what is going to be your configuration space. So then we have an action described now in term of and this define you what we call a symplectic structure with some Poisson bracket, okay? So you can read the symplectic structure here. So where here QP, the Poisson bracket is equal to 1. Then of course you can define the Poisson bracket for any function on your phase space. Where f and g are two functions on your phase space, and you just use this expression. And so this is in the case where this map is invertible. All these maps are invertible. In the other case, then you have constraint. Okay. And this was the topic of the first tutorial. But so let's just finish with the vocabulary maybe. So the time evolution, and here, this is going to be really important. If you consider a system with constraint, you really have to use the evolution is defined as the flow of the Hamiltonian, okay? And in particular, if you have constraint, you really have to use your Hamiltonian to define the evolution of your variable or any function, in fact, in the phase space. And PI so now is minus, and any phase space function, you can look at this time evolution looking at the flow with the Hamiltonian. Okay, so this equation has a solution as what we call a flow. So a flow is just a curve in phase space, okay, which is given by QIT and PIT at any time, where T is a parameter and you have where you can have initial condition, okay? Okay, so this was just for some vocabulary. So now if we have constraint, so if constraint okay, so this means in particular this happens when one of the map PI invertible, then we are going to define our constraint. So if we have constraints, this means that again we have a relation of this type. And we can have many constraints. And then, so you are going to define your Hamiltonian as the usual. So here, if I call that H0, but let's rewrite, so it's P. Plus some parameter, let's call them lambda, which are called the Lagrange multiplier, which can be function of space-time. And so now you're going to, if you want to find the time evolution, everything is going to be defined in terms of this Hamiltonian, okay? So, and it's, so let's go back to, so any questions here? Okay, so let's, sorry, yeah. So let's go back now to the example of the tutorial, okay? Where the first example, you were given this Lagrangian, and you can check if you compute the Euler-Lagrange equation, that what you find is that what you are describing is a particle moving of mass m, which move on a circle of radius r, okay? So in a, of course, in a two-dimensional plane, spanned by Q1 and Q2, and Q3 can be interpreted as the force necessary to make the particle stay on the circle. So this was the interpretation of this system, and you can see that just looking at the Euler-Lagrange equation and to solve them. Okay, this is quite. But now let's try to go to the Hamiltonian description of this system. And so the first step is to compute the PI. So here, Q dot is V. And so if you do this, you can check that, of course, P3 is going to be equal to zero. Okay, so this gives you a first constraint, and it's what we call the primary constraint. So the primary constraint comes from your analysis, starting from your Lagrangian, and looking at the canonical momenta, and see if this map are invertible or not, okay? Or if you have some constraint. So here, from this, you get this first constraint. So the first constraint is just P3. And so this means that now your Hamiltonian is going to be defined as, so the usual formula, so you can compute this to check, plus you need to add one Lagrange multiplier times your constraint, which is P3. And you see that now. Oops. Yeah, so now you see that the fact that P3 is equal to zero is going to appear as an equation of motion, okay? When you do the variation with respect to your Lagrange multiplier. So, okay. And so you start with a state that we say it's in the constraint surface, okay, which is defined by this constraint. But you want to stay on the constraint surface. So this means that, and again, you want that this constraint holds at every time. So what you need to check now is the time evolution of this constraint. You want this to be as is a constraint, so you really want it. You want this to be a constant, okay? So you need to check the time evolution of this. And if you do this, okay, so this means that now with this h, you just compute the time evolution of your first constraint, your primary constraint. And in this case, you will find that this is not zero. You will find this expression, in fact. So in order to get this equal to zero, you need to impose this as a new constraint. And it's what we call the secondary constraint. Yeah?
And at that point, like, we immediately know without doing any calculation that there's going to be the theory constraint? Because those two equations, like the secondary constraint that we find doesn't rule out the possibility that we have a spring.
Yeah.
So then we already know that there's more.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. Yeah, in this context. Sometimes it's not so easy to see that you have more, because either the physical interpretation is not easy or even the counting of degree of freedom. Because you can also see that by the here your system. So we said that it's a particle moving on a circle. So what does it mean? This means that you have only 1 degree of freedom, which if we were not using the Cartesian coordinate, but an angle, will be the angle, okay? And here you can see that the dimension of the phase space is 6, okay? Instead of, whereas we are expecting a dimension of 2 degrees of, in the when you're talking in the phase space. And here we have 3 configuration degrees of freedom, and then you have the 3 momenta associated to that. So it's 6 in the phase space. So you can see already that indeed you are expecting some constraint. Okay, so we have 1 constraint, but we're indeed expecting 4 if they are not in this specific case. Yeah. So, okay, so is it clear how this constraint appear? Okay, so it's really in order to preserve this constraint. And then you need to check again. So now you have a second constraint, and you need to check again that this constraint is preserved under time evolution. And again, in this case, it's not the case, okay? And you find another constraint, a third one, and you repeat the same strategy. You check again that the third constraint is still equal to zero, and by time evolution, and here you find this complicated expression, but you see that this one can be simplified, because here you can simplify it using psi 2, because you want to stay on the constraint surface. So what we are going to say is that weakly, so what do we have here? And this is weakly equal to only this term, okay? Minus Q3 plus and And so what do I mean by weekly? Weekly, so we're using this notation, okay? And when it's weakly equal, this means that this is valid only on the constrained surface, okay? And why is it the case here? It's because to simplify this expression, I use one of the constraints. Okay, so this is not true outside the constrained surface, but on the constrained surface, you can simplify and you have this equality. So usually we want everything to be weakly zero or weakly equal, okay? Because we are only interested in states living in the constrained surface. So you see, we started with this primary constraint. So first, your kinematic, or what we call the kinematical constraint surface was just defined by this constraint, but now you're adding more constraints, so you're restricting again your constraint surface, okay? It's getting smaller and smaller. And so then we have a fourth constraint, and now we need again to check that by time evolution it's still equal to zero, and now we find this new expression. So here, if you look at that, you can see that this one is indeed related to the third one. Yeah, so this is your third constraint. So this is the third constraint. So this is weakly equal, so meaning it's equal on the constraint surface only to U, which is your Lagrange multiplier, okay? So what does it mean here? This means that this Hamiltonian is totally fixed, okay? Because you see that when I'm writing this equation with here, when I'm defining this Hamiltonian, in fact, I don't have only one Hamiltonian. I have an infinite number of Hamiltonian. Okay, are not fixed. These parameters, a priori, are not fixed. So then you need to do all the analyses to see if you get a constraint or not on your Hamiltonian. And so in this case, you can see that all your system is completely constrained, and the U is also fixed to be zero on the constrained surface. So this means that you have only one Hamiltonian. So the time evolution of your system is going to be deterministic, meaning if you start from some initial condition, you evolve using your Hamiltonian, you will have only one possible evolution. But you can already see that if one of the lambda here is not fixed, it's not going to be the case. And it's what we have in what we call the gauge theories, because in gauge theory, you don't have a unique time evolution, okay? So here, if one of the lambda is not fixed by the constraint, this means that you can start with a given initial condition, and you have different way to evolve this initial condition because you have different Hamiltonian accessible, okay, allowed. So this is going to be, so this case, it's just in this example, This example was here to show you that you really have to be careful when you have a constraint. You want this constraint to be preserved by time evolution, okay, to be valid, because as I said, a constraint is going to be is a conserved quantity. So you want it to be, or you want your constraint to hold at any time, okay, every time. So when you have primary constraint, that it doesn't mean that you don't have additional constraint, and you really have to check this. Okay, so this was to introduce this kind of notion of primary constraint, secondary constraint, and then usually you don't have so many additional constraints. This system was a bit defined this way really to show you that it's quite important. And of course, if now you work with your Hamiltonian, you look at the Hamiltonian equation of evolution, you will recover the same geometrical interpretation for this system, okay? Physical interpretation, sorry. Okay, so this was the first system. So now let's have a look to the second example to see what else we can say. So this second example, I was given to use this new Lagrangian. And here you could see that, in fact, you could simplify a lot this Lagrangian because you could make the change of variable Q1 is q1 plus q2, okay? And you could, of course, you need 2 degrees of freedom, so then you would have, for example, this second variable, okay? This is a usual change of variable, but then you see that if now you replace by you make the change variable in your Lagrangian. This Lagrangian is just going to determine the dynamics of this big Q1, okay, only this degree of freedom. So of course, if you forget that this part, so you could see that as a given particle. If you forget about the second one, okay, that in fact is a system of two particles, then yeah, everything is well defined. But here, the issue is that it's made of two particles. So you can already see that in this system, it's going to have some internal degrees of freedom, which are not going to be fixed. And this is going to be what we call a gauge symmetry, okay? And so now if you do again the Hamiltonian analysis, meaning if you compute the conjugated momenta, what you find is that P1 is going to be equal to P2. So you have one primary constraint, which is given by P1 minus P2. So then again, you build your new Hamiltonian, where H0 is the one without any constraint. Okay. And you look at the time evolution of your constraint, and here you find that it's zero. Okay? So this means that there is no more constraint here. You only have one. And you don't have, and also what does it mean? It means that now you don't have any restriction on U, okay? So what does it mean? This means that you don't have only one Hamiltonian, but you have many Hamiltonians. So now starting from a given initial condition, when you're going to evolve, you have the choice of your Hamiltonian. So you have your choice of your time evolution. And of course, this is not going to be physical because you know that we want physics to be deterministic. So this means that we have additional degrees of freedom, which we need to fix that. And these are what we call the gauge symmetry. Okay, so let's see what is the role of this constraint here. So meaning, is it going to generate a symmetry and which kind of symmetry? So let's look at, so here, yeah, the first conclusion is that the time evolution, so you have a two-particle system and the Lagrangian is only using written in terms of this variable. So the time evolution of this variable is completely arbitrary here, okay? This is the first conclusion. And now let's look at the role of this constraint. Meaning, we know that it's going to generate, since it's a conserved quantity, this constraint is a conserved quantity, we know that it's going to be associated to a symmetry, so which kind of symmetry, okay? So it's going to generate a symmetry. And now the question is, which kind of symmetry? Or maybe I'm going to. So this means that we want to look at the flow generated by this constraint. So this means that we want to look at this equation. So let's look at the small variable. Okay, so we want to compute this kind of equation. It's the flow in the phase space. Let's also look at the evolution of and thanks. P1 and here. So Q2 okay, so again we are interested only on what is happening on the constraint surface. So that's why here I can put that out. Okay, is that clear to everyone? Because of course, if I look at something like, let's take any function, this is of course equal to okay, if I'm using sorry. Yeah. And this is equal to zero on the constraint surface, so weakly I can only consider. Okay, so that's why you never need to look at the Poisson bracket of this Lagrange multiplier, and because you're only interested at what is happening on the constraint surface, and on the constraint surface you only have this, okay, to take into account. Okay, so now what do we get here? So if you compute this, you get just u. Here you get zero. Then you get minus u, and you get zero. So you see that this constraint is, of course, going to leave the what we call here physical, because physical, the physical quantity can be seen as this Q1, because it's the only one which is evolving under this with this dynamic. So it's going to change it invariant, okay? Because you can take the sum of the two, then it's going to be zero. And for the P1 plus P2, the evolution of P1 and P2 is also zero. So here, leave physical so the Q1 invariant, and the momentum but we see that now it's going to change what we have. It's a kind of internal decrease of freedom. Because now if you look at Q1 minus Q2, you get something in terms of U, okay? Freedom which is given in terms of U2. And so here the time evolution consists of a physical evolution of the position and momentum plus the transformation generated by the constraint with an arbitrary, so this can be time dependent with a time dependent parameter. So this means that now starting from the same initial condition, again, the state can evolve into different final states as we are free to choose this U. Okay, so this is what we call now a gauge. So of course, if we want to be, we want physics to be deterministic, we have to assign that degree of freedom is to assume that this degree of freedom is unphysical, okay? And so two states which can evolve out of a single state into two different states must be declared to be physically equivalent. And it's what I was telling you. What we're going to call physically equivalent are going to be related by what we call a gauge transformation, which is this kind of transformation, okay? Any question on that? So from these two examples, you can see first, from the first one, you can see different kind of constraints, which are this kind of primary constraint and then secondary, et cetera, constraint. And now the question is, how can we say that the constraint is going to generate a gauge symmetry? What are the kind of constraints we generate a kind of? And for this, I need to introduce a new distinction between the constraints. So here, I just talk about primary and secondary, but another distinction which is important is the first class constraint and second class constraint. So have you heard about that already? More or less, or? So you know the definition? Okay, so maybe I can, do you want me to recall it quickly or? Yeah, okay. So I can do that. Yeah, at some point you should let me know if you're already familiar with what I'm telling you, if it's too slow, too fast, too, I don't know. Okay, because I can, of course, I can adapt if. So let's go to the definition of, so another distinction. And this, of course, I'm spending some time on that. This is not concretely quantum gravity yet. But I think this is important because you can use this kind of, this is useful for other systems than just gravity, okay? This kind of just constraint system in the canonical formulation. So between constraint, so let's consider a system with constraint and here it's a primary secondary, so this means that I already did this analysis completely, okay? I'm at the end, either I got a condition on Lagrange multiplier or it's done, but I have all my constraints, the primary, the secondary, etc. Okay, so it's primary. So now if there is a subset of constraints for which the Poisson bracket with all constraints vanish weakly vanish, in fact we only need that. Meaning that we have something like this with any of the constraint is equal to weakly zero, okay, then these are what we call the first class constraint. And so now this is the first subset. Usually it's not going to be depending on. And now if we denote the remaining constraint by this means that we have take away all the primary constraint, then you have a submatrix defined as, so meaning you look at all the Poisson brackets between these other constraint, and this has to be invertible. If it's not, this means that still there is a linear combination of first class constraint in it. Inside, you forgot about that. And in this case, then usually the, in this case, the associated Lagrange multiplier are going to be weakly fixed. And so in this case, the UM are, by this I mean the Lagrange multiplier. In this case, so this means that you're not going to have, if you have only second class constraint, you won't have many Hamiltonian, you will have a unique Hamiltonian. And these are what we call the second class constraint. Okay, so this was the definition, the other distinction I wanted to give you. And so if you look at this first example and you compute the Poisson bracket between all your constraints you have, the four constraints you have, you can check that they are all second class. Okay. Meaning you don't have, none of them is going to be weakly zero with all the other constraints. Whereas in gravity, in 3D gravity, all the constraints we are going to have are the first class constraint, and the first class constraint are the constraint we are going to generate the gauge transformation. So the first class constraints are associated to gauge symmetry, and you can understand this already at this level when I told you that in the case of second class constraint, all the Lagrange multipliers associated to the second class constraint are going to be fixed. So you're going to have only one Hamiltonian, or at least. But here, this means that you cannot fix the Lagrange multiplier in this case, okay? Because you have this weakly zero, so it's not going to, of course, you won't have this invertible. So you cannot, yeah, I could write you the equation explicitly to see that you cannot solve for the U, the Lagrange multiplier, and so these are the first class constraints are going to generate the gauge symmetry. Okay, so you won't have only one Hamiltonian, only one evolution. Okay, any question on this now? So now I want to. So these are what we're going to use. Of course, it's going to be useful for the canonical analysis of the 3D gravity, of the action of 3D gravity. But in fact, 3D gravity, we don't know yet why it's so complicated. And it's going to be complicated because, in fact, we have one thing which make complicated is that we have a totally constrained system. Okay, so let's look at a simple example of a totally constrained system. And the simplest one is to consider the parametrized particle. So it's going to be the simplest example of a generally covariant system. Yeah, yes, of course. Is invertible here? So this is really as a matrix. So you can, for example, the easiest way to check that it's invertible, you compute the determinant of this matrix. So this means that each of that is going to give you a coefficient, okay? Each of these Poisson brackets. So you have, so then you have a matrix, and then you can show that indeed the determinant of this matrix is not zero, so it's invertible, and so you can, so. And that's why you can fix here weakly this coefficient, because in your equation, in fact, what you need to inverse is this object to get an equation on that. Okay. So you mean for this?
Because it was a function, right?
Yeah, it's function. Yeah. Yeah, you're right. The coefficient of the matrix are not, yeah, are not just a number. It's a function of space-time. But so it's, yeah, it can be, I guess, yeah, it can be zero at some point. It's just.
Maybe it can be shown that at every point it's not singular.
I mean, yeah.
Some can be zero, some others. I mean, it changes, but it's never singular. Maybe it can be shown that it's never singular.
Yeah, it's correct. Okay. Yeah, you're right. It's indeed a complicated function that you have inside. So it's not only, it's just not just a function. It's just not just a matrix with 1, 2, 3 as number. Yeah. Good question. Any other question? Okay. So let's go to look at the and why. So do we look at the system? It's because it's going to be very similar to the symmetry we're going to get. It's going to be very similar to the diffeomorphism symmetry of GR, okay? Because, so let's look at, no, it's totally. System, and I want to look at the, so it's going to be here very similar to the diffeo symmetry of GR in the way that we are going now to have a reparametrization given by the coordinate transformation of the time parameter. So of, because it's going to feature a gauge symmetry. So which is given by coordinate transformation of the time parameter, which will be introduced transformation of the time parameter which here is going to be introduced as a dynamical variable. Okay, and so we are going to see that what is going, how it's going to complicate everything. So we just want to look at a free non-relativistic particle in one space spatial dimension. So the action is going to be first given by and we're here, I denote by dot the derivative. So this is going to be important because now, so you see that here it's just a functional of q, but I want to introduce now the time parameter as a dynamical parameter, a dynamical variable. So this is the derivative, derivative with respect to t. And so of course you can evaluate the action on its extremal point, and it's going to give you the solution. Q of 2 is going to be where here t is, in fact, this dependence t, because it's going to, it's what I'm calling my initial condition here. But so in non-relativistic physics, usually what assumes that the time parameter t is going to correspond to some external clock, okay, which is not influenced by the dynamic of the system. But this is not, of course, the case of what we're going to have in GR. And so in order to mimic the background independence, we can reformulate, because so here, yeah, you see that the time is fixed and you consider it's not influenced by the dynamic of your system. But if we want really to mimic what we have in GR, where we have this background independence, we should consider T as an additional, T as a dynamical variable. And for this, we need to introduce an additional parameter, S. And of course, we are going to see at the end that this parameter cannot be physical. But so in this case of the parameterized particle, things are going to be easy because we know what are, we can still go back to this simplest system. Whereas in GR, of course, you don't have this guideline, okay? So it's going to be, of course, much more complicated. So in order to mimic GR, I'm going to introduce a new parameter. To mimic background independence. And so I'm going to define the action now as, so this is Q of T. Here, in fact, is Q of T. So now I want to replace this, but by adding auxiliary time evolution parameter. So I'm going to extend this to a two-dimensional configuration space. So now I have Q of S and T of S. Okay, so what does it mean? This means that I can maybe really see that now Q of T, we can see this S a bit like the curvilinear parameter, because now on a curve, you can describe this as Q of S, T of S. Okay, so what do I get now? My new action and t is going to be given by so we're here. This prime now means the derivative with respect to x, okay? And here I just use the chain rule, meaning that q dot, of course, is dq over dt, which can also be written as dq over ds dot. So you have this q prime t prime over t prime, okay? And you can check now that this action is invariant. So I'm not going to perform all the analysis here, but the action is invariant under reparametrization, okay? Meaning that you can f of s, define this new parameter where f is a smooth function. And this is your gauge symmetry. So it's the gauge symmetry here. Is reparametrization. Invariance. So this means that if here t of s and q of s is a solution, any reparametrized path will be also a solution where it's going to be t of f of s and q of f of s. Okay. So now let's do the canonical analysis here and see why we call that a totally constrained system. And then tomorrow I think we'll so what is here the Hamiltonian picture? So let's do the canonical analysis to see what is the Hamiltonian picture. So the conjugated momentum associated to the variable t now is given by or you can consider the Lagrangian the same, and so it's minus and you get square divided by okay, so starting from this action here. Then you need to compute the conjugated momentum associated to the q variable, which is given by, and what you get is here it's linear, so you get m q tilde. So can you see what are the constraints that you have here? So you see that indeed you have a non-trivial relation between these two momenta here. So you get the constraint. So let's call it C, which is just given by P T plus okay, if you compare these two equation. This is equal to zero. So what is now the Hamiltonian of the system? Is again we use T prime plus PQ Q prime minus L, where L is just you can rewrite this as, or also using the definition of the momentum, you can rewrite it this way, time t prime. And so here, what you get at the end is that this is t. And this is t prime times c. So you see that t prime here appears as the Lagrange multiplier. And here your system is totally constrained. And we will see that this is a feature that we are going to get again in gravity. Okay. And so, yeah, I don't have so much time here to give you. So, of course, now we are going to see where the difficulty comes from. We're going to look at the evolution and see how do we go back to a physical evolution. How do we define what we call observables, okay? And this is, in this case, of course, we can go back to what we know, because we just complicated the system to try to mimic general relativity. But in the case of general relativity, of course, we don't have this guide to define really the observable. So it's not so simple. Okay, so I'm going to stop here.